This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
Talking to three Nebraska guys, we're gonna get a little rivalry going, no matter what, about football.
And Brock Rahm.
I know, I get emotional talking about 90s Nebraska football as well.
How much planning and prep do you do before you shoot? Well, Nicole Ryder has a way of producing content to make you feel like you're there. So we asked her to spill the beans and talk us through her approach with long-form content, setting the scene, getting the access, and sharing stories.
All right. Did you guys like my twinkly magic fingers there before the clap?
I didn't even notice. I was so busy. I was so locked in on the time.
I didn't see him either.
I noticed the time.
Thank you. At least somebody did.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com. Excited to have Nicole joining us here today on the Creative Sports Podcast and talk a little bit about her background and work that she's doing currently at the University of Florida as a producer and content editor. And Nicole, do you want to just jump in and give us a little bit of a background, you know, going from where you started growing up in North Carolina to South Carolina to Mississippi to now Florida? It sounds like quite the journey so far to really jump in and do what you can to stick in sports and find something that you really enjoy doing.
Yeah, sure. So I'm just doing a little tour of SEC schools. So I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. We actually moved there when I was about 2 years old. And the year we moved there is the year the Carolina Panthers were founded. And so grew up going to games with my dad. And when they first started, we're not very good at all. They were like 1-15 every year, 0-16 sometimes. But just kind of grew up having that bond, just growing up loving the game of football. And so I knew I always wanted to get into sports, but was never good enough to play collegiately or professionally. And so I was thinking, what way can I get into this field? And I first wanted to do like on-air reporting, growing up just watching like Aaron Andrews and all those people on the sidelines of games. I was like, this is what I want to do. So I went into college, and my sophomore year, I got involved with like the social media aspect of it. So I did an internship with our athletic department there. Like, enjoyed it, but still wanted to do a little bit more. And so then I got involved with Gamecock Productions, which is the in-house video department for athletics, and then worked there from second semester of my sophomore year until I graduated. I was given some really cool opportunities, just fell in love with being behind the camera, working with athletes, telling their stories, kind of all of that goes into college athletics and stuff. And then from there, I got a job at Mississippi State when I graduated. And so when I got to State, I was responsible for soccer, baseball, and then eventually moved into football. And then did everything for like video board, social media, just anything coaches wanted, players wanted. And then after about 3.5 years, I moved to Florida. And so that's where I currently am now. And I do baseball and football. And then I oversee men's and women's tennis. And then I also help run our student program. And so we have about 18 students. And that's probably one of my favorite parts besides the storytelling aspect of athletes is working with students, because I would not be where I am without being a student. And so part of, I think, this role is being able to give back. And so I love doing that, seeing students succeed and once they graduate, seeing where they go and still being able to connect with former students and helping them still in their jobs today. So it's a little bit of a background of where I am now and how I got here.
I think that's so cool. I mean, I think that every one of us that have come through an athletic department, you know, student program can kind of vouch for, you know, how special that is and the way that it feels good to be able to give back to the students. But, you know, for you coming out of a place like South Carolina where, you know, there's this long line of really strong producers and creatives that come out of there, like, now that you're in charge of students, what do you look for in running a creative student program that you kind of learned from where you were at South Carolina? And what did South Carolina do so well?
I think one of the things South Carolina did really well is giving us a broad learning experience. So it wasn't like, okay, you come in and you're only going to do this. You're only going to work with this sport. And so I was able to shoot probably 16 or 17 different sports, edit things for that, because every sport is going to be very different. So at South Carolina, we had equestrian, which is not very common. And that is completely different than shooting, say, like a football or basketball game. And like, people don't get to see that very often. And so it was very cool to be able to do that. So that's definitely something I take, is trying to get students to do a variety of things, like being able to shoot different sports, and then also being able to edit different things. So like, a feature is very different than a hype video. And so you kind of have to learn those things and try different things to see what you like. And so I also think that's a very big part of like my job, is sports is very time consuming, which we all know. You don't get days off, you don't get holidays, you don't have weekends. And so it's also trying to make sure that they enjoy what they're doing, because once you get into this, it's a lot, which can be really fun, but you just have to learn it. And so I think that's something I also try and teach my students, is that you're kind of getting an intro into what it would be like. Obviously, it's a little different being a student and being a full-time person, but just kind of an intro into that, and then just seeing what they like, what they don't like, how we can help them. If they want to be on camera, giving them opportunities to do interviews, and then also helping them when they do it, like, okay, maybe try doing it this way this time. Don't sway as much when you're on camera, and just trying to help them in little things that, like, when they're practicing as a student, they can take forward when they eventually, hopefully, become a professional in this industry.
You know, growing a student program is something that I got asked about a lot. Like, how do you continue to recruit and build students when I was at Minnesota? And, you know, I think there are a lot of different ways that we did it, but I'd be curious, how have you found success in building and growing the base of your students that you're working with there at Florida and at previous stops?
I think a lot of it is word of mouth, because students talk to each other, they're all in the same classes, and then they'll post a lot of stuff on social media, and it's like, oh, I see you doing this, that's so cool, how do I get involved? And so I think that's part of it. And I'd say we now have like an interview process we do, just because at Florida especially, our sports are really always good, always like in the top 10. And so a lot of people just want to get involved, and it's almost finding people who have that drive and that commitment and are willing to put in the hours, and then also getting into it for the right reasons, because it is like kind of glamorous what we get to do. You're always on the sidelines. You get to meet a lot of cool people, a lot of like famous people who will be famous one day if they're not already while they're in college. And so it's just trying to find people who are doing it for the right reasons. They want to tell stories, and they're just getting into it for like, oh, I want to be on the sidelines to like post a cool picture, like say I know this person, and it's actually like being able to tell their stories and stuff like that.
I know in the college environment, you wear a lot of hats a lot of the times, somebody coming from the college environment as well. But you do a lot of longer form feature type work. And I'm going to tie this back into the students. Let's say you're going out, you're producing a shoot, you're producing an interview. What does student involvement in your features look like on a day-to-day basis? How many are you taking on a shoot? Are you letting some of them conduct interviews, do some of the pre-work for that? What's that look like?
So I guess in pre-COVID times, we'd like to have as many people as we could come with us. Just because if we do a two camera setup, it's a lot of equipment and got to make sure lighting looks good, audio is good. So in the past, I would say I'd probably try and take at least three students, if not four, too, so they can just see it and kind of learn. Now we're a little bit more limited, so probably like just one student, just depending on if we're doing like inside, outside, things like that. But actually a few weeks ago, we were doing our like tennis media days. And so I have one of my students who kind of runs everything for tennis, and then I just oversee her. And so she kept asking me all these questions, and I was like, I want you to take the lead on this. You're going to write all the questions. You're going to conduct the interviews, but I'll be there along the way so you can send me them. We can bounce back and forth on ideas. Like, I think this is a good question. Word this differently. And then she asked all the questions, conducted all the interviews, and I was more there just to kind of run the camera. But I had her like set everything up, make sure she like the framing was how she wanted it to be. So she could just kind of learn that way. So I think it just depends on the skill set and like how long they've been there. So if it was a newer student, I'd probably have them come with me and I would run everything, but I'd be like, okay, this is why we're setting things up this way. And like, this is why we're framing it this way, things like that. And then as soon as they get older, or like the second or third time they go on an interview, it's okay, you've seen me do this a few times, so you set everything up. I want to make sure you know what you're doing, but I'm there just to supervise and make sure that everything runs smoothly.
Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like you're implementing the crawl, walk, run kind of mentality. You know, going back to when you were talking about having applications and making sure that you wanted to find students that were interested and invested. So what stands out to you during that interview process, and how can you determine who's a right fit for the program?
So we would do in-person interviews, but now you have to do everything over Zoom. And so I'm a very big like vibe person. So like I can kind of just tell seeing someone's face, how they react, how they answer questions, just kind of like not the research, but almost like the research they've done. I'll ask them like, hey, what have you seen that we do that you're interested in? And I can kind of judge based on their answers if they actually know what we do or if they're just like, oh, this is cool, I want to do it, and kind of base it off of that. And then just like kind of seeing how they are, if they have questions about what we do, if they don't have any questions, it's kind of like, we didn't tell you everything we do and we do so much. So how do you not have any questions about how we do anything? And then obviously like with students too, we like to have students that have experience, but obviously when you're in college, sometimes this is how you first get it. And so we'll ask them about experience they have. And if they seem like, if they don't have any experience, like that's obviously fine, but then just kind of seeing where they're going, what they kind of know and what they want to do. And just like, if they know anything about like what Premiere is and just things like that.
I think that's awesome. I mean, to me, that's totally in line with what I've seen, where I want people who are going to ask questions in interviews, and I want people who know what we do, because like those two things, like researching and being curious, are two skill sets that are going to lead you to success in this field, like so far past the interview, and like, especially doing long form. Like I feel like that's the two biggest keys to my job, is the research and, you know, just being curious about a person. And you know, for you, I know you really enjoy the long form side, and you know, that's something that you've done quite a bit of now. Like for you, how do you go about some of that research? How do you go about prepping? How do you go about finding and picking stories when you're, you know, getting the opportunity to do long form?
I think part of it is working really well with our SIDs, because they spend a lot of time with our athletes. We do as well, but they just are there more with them. And so kind of talking to them, seeing if they know any interesting stories, and then also just kind of looking at their social media accounts, reading bios, and kind of just like digging in to see what they do. And I also think part of it is like building trust with athletes. And like once you kind of are around them a lot, you'll pick up, they do certain things, they say certain things, and then you'll hear something and you're like, oh, that's very interesting. Let me do a little bit more research or ask a little bit more about this. And I think that's kind of how, what sparks some of my ideas. And so I know one of my favorite features that I did was on one of our players at Mississippi State. His father had passed away, and found out like kind of through social media, he had posted about it. And so I had asked one of our SIDs, I was like, do you think he'd be open to just like talking about it? Like obviously his dad was really big impact on him playing football, going to Mississippi State. He was like, let me talk to him about it and see what he says. And then he like came back and was like, yeah, he said, I'll do it with you. And so after I got the okay, I kind of talked to him before just at practice, like, hey, thanks so much for doing this. And then just kind of like building that relationship. So that way, when we did sit down for an interview on a very touchy subject, he was very open with me. He wasn't kind of closed off, wasn't giving me short answers. And so kind of segueing on your question, but just like building those relationships, I think is how you are able to do some of these stories. And all athletes are different. So some are just like an open book and they'll sit down, don't care about anything, they'll tell you anything. And then some you just have to kind of like pry and make those relationships so they'll actually speak to you. But going back to the original question, yeah, I guess just social media stuff, just reading bios, just kind of like talking to the guys and seeing what they're interested in, or guys or girls, and just seeing what they're interested in.
I think you touched on something that's probably something that not a lot of people do as much as they should, which is approaching somebody and starting the conversation without any gear or equipment. And I, you know, building that relationship is great. And, you know, just watching some of your long form content and what you were able to do, especially at Mississippi State, working with players directly, going to their hometowns, you know, the Jeffrey Simmons piece is one that I watched, and the way that you set it up was really well done. I felt like I was there, and I think your scenics and your shots and your shot selection and how you shot them, whether it was low angle, you know, side angle or whatever you chose and however you chose to, it advanced the story. So, I guess I'd be curious to get into how you go about that approach, when you're actually with somebody in their hometown, maybe that one as an example. How do you peel off and know what you want to grab as a side shot? Are you capturing stuff in the moment? Are you doing prep work ahead of time?
Yeah, so that actually, I love that feature. So I worked with one of my other coworkers, Derek Cody, on that. And then our photographer, actually, Kelly Donahoe, came along with us. So we did a video and kind of like a photo journalism type story with it. And so me and Kelly actually spent probably 2 days just prepping, researching the town he was from. Once we figure out who the interviews were going to be, kind of like researching those people and just like probably had like 3 pages worth of notes on just like, okay, this is where his high school is. This is where he grew up. Just like shots he wanted to get. And so Macon, where he's from, is about like 45 minutes away from Starkville. So it wasn't too far of a drive. And then we had kind of knowing going into it, we wanted to mic him up for like the whole day and plan out like, okay, I'm going to ride with him in the car. We're going to drive past all these places. So when I was in his car with him, Derek and Kelly were going around getting other like B-roll scenic shots of places like around his house. And then once we were done with him, we actually went back a few places and just kind of retraced our steps to get more just like scenic shots of what we knew he said. We're like, okay, we need to make sure we have this shot and this shot. And then I had a wide angle and I believe Derek had like a 70 to 200 lens, I think. So we had a variety of shots. And then we also knew going in that we didn't want Jeffrey's interview to be a typical like sit down interview. We wanted it to be more of a walk and talk, or if we get somewhere and we kind of like this spot, we can just have him sit. So I don't know if we ever showed him sitting, but one of the places we went was the weight room and he kind of walked around, showed us his locker. And so he kind of ended up just sitting down on one of the benches. And then I just like asked him a few questions while he was sitting there and it turned out really well. And then he like walked around the field and then went to the barber shop and things like that. So we kind of had our day planned out. And then obviously based on some things he said, we would mix it up. And then we had him like walk up and down the hallway and then of his school, talked about one of his teachers. And then when we went back, we're like, okay, we need to get shots of the trophies because he talked about those. He talked about his high school team. So we got shots of the banner. I think those were ended up being in the weight room. And so it was very much like, we know what we want to do, but also kind of being on the fly with depending on what his responses were. And so that's kind of how we did that. And then obviously when you're editing, some things change. And so we had to end up doing like another shoot and getting some more stuff. But he was awesome. And I had known Jeffrey for 2 years prior to when we did that. And so I actually approached him. I was like, hey, we're thinking about doing this. Would you be open to it? And he was all for it. But again, kind of going back to what I said earlier, if I didn't have that relationship with him, I don't think he would have wanted to do it. He's an amazing guy, but it's just, again, you're so close to him. He's telling you his life story and he had a very hard childhood. And so again, it's just like being comfortable with someone and him being able to speak about it, I think was really important. And so, yeah, that's kind of what went into it. It was a very long process, took a while to edit too, with you wanted to make sure like he was okay with how the story was told as well. And then portraying him in the right way, portraying like his hometown in the right way. It's very small Southern like town, and so just making sure you made it look good and things like that.
You brought up something that I think is really important, which is making sure that they're okay with the story, especially something so personal. What does that review process look like with an athlete when you're telling a story that personal, and how do you take into account their direction on it, for lack of a better word?
So before we had even started and went out there, when I talked to him, I told him kind of this is the way we were going to do it, at least what I was thinking in my head. This is how we were going to tell his story. And so he was on board with everything. And then once we actually made it, I sent it to one of our, like our head football SID. And so he reviewed it, had a few changes. And then I think it went to like another higher up person in admin. I can't remember exactly who. And so they all had to review it, had like minor changes and stuff. And then once it was done, I was like, okay, I'm going to send it to him just to make sure he's okay with it. And he loved it and he was really happy with how it turned out. So we didn't actually have that many changes, which is really nice. But I think it's because we did a lot of work in the forefront to make sure he was okay with everything and everyone kind of knew the direction we were going. So that way, once we made it, it wasn't really a surprise. It was more just kind of the order of things, I think, got a little changed and like how we started and ended. It probably wasn't exactly how I wrote out. But again, that just comes with the answers you get when you're asking questions, because you have an idea what people are going to say, but you never actually know what they're going to say in the moment. And then when he'll talk about other things, it's like, oh, this is too good to not put in. So I think honestly, the piece ended up being like 8.5 minutes, but I think the first edit was probably more like 12 minutes or something. And then we ended up cutting a bunch of stuff just because it was a little too long. but it worked out being that long anyway. So
that's funny. That's actually really what I was going to ask next, was about length of features. Like you kind of touch on it there. Like I've become now in TV so used to trying to hit, you know, a mark, you know, a 30 minute show. And, you know, when I was at Minnesota, we kind of had free reign because the stuff's just going out on digital, right? How do you decide how long you're going to make a feature? How long, you know, is the right amount of time when you're in the edit?
I think the worst thing you can do when you're doing long form is limit yourself and say, this has to be like 2 minutes, or this can only be 2 minutes long. This has to be 5 minutes long. And I know in TV, it's very different because it has to be like certain times for TV or for commercials and time slots and things like that. So we are pretty lucky that we can go into it and not have a set time. But I think it's more just how engaging the story is and how, like, if you think people are going to respond to it. And so I don't ever limit myself and say, okay, it can only be 3 minutes or so, just because if someone's telling a story and it's really emotional, you have to be able to give someone time to like pause and collect their thoughts, because that almost does more than someone speaking or someone saying anything. And so you just have to give yourself time. And I think you go through and you do your first edit and you always leave more stuff in than you think you need. And so that's why I think it's always good that you have other people watch it, because they'll see and like, oh no, like you can probably take this out. Or like, he kind of already said this in this way, he's just restating himself, so you can take this out again. And so I don't ever limit myself on time. It's more like if I watch something and then it's, oh wow, that was 5 minutes long, that only seemed like it was a minute, then I'm like, I did a really good job on this, because that's the goal, is you don't want people to sit there and be like, okay, is it over yet? Is it over? It should be no. Oh my gosh, why is it over? And so I never really limit myself on time. I think it's more just like, is the story engaging? Are people going to watch this? How are they going to react? And just go from there.
When I heard you giving an overview of all the different places that you went, my mind was like, okay, so you have a mic on in the car, all these different environments, your lighting is different there. It's going to be different when you're outside. And then you go into a school, you go into a weight room, which in high schools, those are traditionally pretty dark places. You're walking down hallways, all these different places. So what's that like, and how did you prepare ahead of time for that? For maybe you brought an extra light, or since you had three people there, somebody carry some extra equipment so you could switch. And the white balancing thing must have been a nightmare. We've talked about having, you know, the best way to do a shoot is when you control as much as you can. And in that kind of situation, there's really not much control that you have at all. So how did you handle that?
So I'll be honest, the only time we actually use lights for anything or the sit down interviews. So when we interviewed his high school coach and then his principal and then his two principals, I think we use lights for that. And so everything else, to be honest, is just natural lighting. And it worked out in his weight room. They had glass doors, I believe. And so it was pretty well lit for a high school weight room, to be honest. And so it didn't end up being that big of a deal. I would say though, white balancing was an issue because you're constantly going from inside to outside. And so I would say I did more work on the lighting side on the back end and editing. And so I'd have to bring up the exposure in a few spots and just kind of adjust coloring. But for the most part, it was all just natural lighting. And we did it early in the day where the sun wasn't like directly on top of him. And so I think we went out, I think we got there at like 8 or 9 in the morning. And so we were done shooting, I want to say by like one because we just like, we knew what we were doing. So we had a plan. And so I'd say most of the shooting was done at the high school. And then when we drove around in his car and went to the barber shop, that's mostly when it changed. And then the barbershop, I would say, was probably a little dark in lighting, but we were able to adjust it because we shot everything natural speed or normal speed just because it was interviews and stuff. And so we did a few slow-mo things. So those had to, like, the lighting had to be adjusted on those a little bit, but it never got to the point where anything was unusable because it was too dark. In a perfect world, probably would have loved to have someone walk around with a light or something like that.
No. That's where you say your cinema verite, you know, and you're like verite and you're like doing it natural and no lighting. And
but yeah,
I think the other kind of feature that I've kind of seen you work on kind of going through some of your past work is kind of the narrated story. You know, I know I saw one on the baseball stadium there at Florida that you had worked on your Vimeo, and I really liked that one. I mean, for narration, how do you approach that different than, you know, a long form feature where you're out in the field? You know, how do you think about scripting, I guess, when it's something that you can plan and control a little bit more like that?
So is the one you're talking about the opening day one, or was it the close of McKeithen? Do you remember?
I watched them both. I mean, I really liked them both, to be honest. I guess maybe take me through what your role was on kind of each of those and what that was like.
Yeah. So I had just gone to Florida in July of 2019. And so we knew the ballpark was closing and we were going to open a brand new, like, $65 million park that was being built. And so there was so much history in that stadium because Florida baseball just has a history of being really good. And so we're kind of like, how can we showcase the history of this ballpark without being too, like, sentimental at the beginning, but also kind of getting people in their feels, like, wanting to come see the final year of that ballpark. And so it's funny, we were actually on our bowl trip and me and my roommate were sitting in my room and I was like, I really want to do a scripted video kind of saying, like, this is McKeithen, kind of things like that. And she goes, well, what if you did it from, like, the ballpark's perspective? I was like, oh, that's a really good idea. And so we actually kind of just, like, went back and forth. I wrote down kind of a very loose script, like, these are just some of the ideas I have. And then not being there for a while, I also didn't really know what footage we had. And so that was one of the biggest challenges, I would say, is when you're at a place for a while, you're like, okay, I know I have all of this stuff, or you don't. And then I didn't really know what we had. And so that was part of the, like, in that process was going through seeing what video we had. And then we ended up going out and shooting, like, a ton of scenic stuff for it. But anyways, going back to the script part of it. So I wrote down some thoughts and then we kind of went through it together and we're like, okay, what if you change this line and then move this here and then wrote this one in. And so we actually ended up writing the script in probably like an hour. It really didn't take as long, which it was a pretty short script, but it's taken longer to write some before that. And so we just kind of, like, went through it and just were, like, bouncing ideas off of each other. And then we finally landed on something. And it's funny, the guy who ended up voicing over the script is our mailman at Florida. And so we kind of knew we wanted, like, an old timey voice, just because kind of like a Morgan Freeman type vibe, since it was supposed to be sentimental and it's coming from the ballpark. So you wanted kind of an older, rusty kind of voice. And so we were like, hey, would you be interested in doing this? Like, had never done anything like that before. And he was like, I don't know how good I'll be, but, like, sure, I'll come and do it. And so he came, sat in my office, we recorded it. And as soon as he started speaking, I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is perfect. Laid down the video and then found, laid down the audio track and then found music. And I had someone come listen to it. And they were like, this is amazing. Like, you don't even need video over it. Just, like, his voice with the music was perfect. And then obviously once you add the video, gets people in their feels. but yeah, that was kind of like the process of that. And then we knew moving forward that we wanted to do a big piece for the end of the ballpark. And then it kind of just made sense to kind of just go off of what we did at the beginning, since it went really well, to have it at the end. And then obviously with COVID and the season getting canceled, some things changed, but we still knew we wanted to do something like that. And they went out over, like, really well. Our fans loved them, got some people really sad and brought back a lot of memories, but I think they went over very well.
I mean, when I think one of the fun things for me about doing features like that is just the opportunity to be, you know, creative. You can do something different when you can control everything, but I can't imagine picking my mailman to do the voiceover. I mean, that's so cool. And I think it just showcases what the possibilities are when you really open up your mind. And I love it. I think that is probably one of the more interesting things I have ever heard. I think we had another person in here who said that she got inspiration from both her dreams and her nightmares before. And I thought that was pretty interesting, but having the mailman voice it over might be the most fascinating thing I think I've ever learned doing this podcast.
It was really cool too, because he's worked at the UAA and like his son works there too. And so everyone knows who he is that works there. And so as soon as people watched it and heard his voice, they were so excited too, because he was featured. And so you got both like the baseball side of it, and then almost like that family family vibes from it too, because everyone who knows him knew his voice, and he's one of the most friendly people, walks around the hallways all the time, always puts you in a good mood when you see him. And so it worked out really well.
Yeah, that's awesome to get to someone that people will recognize or at least have a connection to, you know, with different accents and different parts of the country. If you put it out on a VO, 123 or whatever you use, I mean, you're probably not going to get that feel to it. So that's really cool. So you also work on hype videos and different kinds of videos. How do you take what you really enjoy doing, whether that's the scripting, the long form content, and implement some of those elements into your hype videos?
So I think every video you tell, in a sense, you want to tell a story in it. And so obviously in a feature or a longer form content, that's a different type of storytelling than a hype video is. But I feel like everything kind of comes back to that you're telling a story type thing. And so I always try and take that into whatever videos I do. But obviously for hype videos, you want to get people like excited and excited about games and stuff. And so I know one of my favorite ones I did this year was our home opener, and we ended up having Steve Spurrier voice it over. And it was kind of our first game back, and fans like couldn't be there. Well, some fans could, but obviously not a packed out house. And so it was still kind of getting for that one, getting people excited about a game, but like not necessarily being able to be there for it, since a lot of people had to stay home and just watch it on TV and couldn't tailgate and things like that. And so that's kind of like the sense we were going for, and just, it was a noon game. And so we were trying to kind of play off of that with like the sunrise at the beginning and just kind of like opening it up and kind of telling a story like, okay, you get like the season starting and then like just kind of going from there for like our home opener. But I think for like hype videos and stuff too, you have to know if you're tailoring it for fans or for the players. And so because everyone sees it, but it's like, who are you making it for? Are you making it for the players? Are you making it for the fans? And so I think the hardest part, honestly, about our job is finding music sometimes. And so just like finding things that match the tone and like the vibe, I guess, you're going for in the videos. So I probably honestly spend more time trying to find music for hype videos than it actually takes me to edit them, to be honest. But yeah, and then just like getting fans exciting, trying new things. I think with like hype videos and then with longer form content, one of the biggest differences too is that in long form, you're not really using a whole lot of effects or like sound effects, but in hype videos, it's more to create an exciting kind of video. And so you can do more stuff and get more creative in that way than you can in long form.
I was going to make a joke about whether Steve Spurrier mentioned the 1995 Orange Bowl. Sorry, I had to.
Talking to three Nebraska guys, we're going to get a little rivalry going no matter what about football.
It's been all downhill since 1997 anyway, right? So
hey, we were in the title game in 2001. Come on.
Sorry, I was gonna ask you a question.
I know I get emotional talking about 90s Nebraska football as well. Lose train of thought on everything. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but I kind of wanted you to go a little bit deeper into it, especially as it relates to feature type content. Where do you see the industry going and what do you see changing? Obviously, we're forced to change right now how we do interviews, like talk to Garrett all the time about how he's doing Zoom interviews with teams. But what do you see with the advent of social media, you know, maybe more cord cutters? What are you seeing in your feature work that's changing on a yearly basis?
So I think people are moving a lot more towards the shorter 30-second, minute-long type videos, but I still think there's a time and place for long-form content. And kind of goes back to what I said earlier, that people are going to watch something that's good no matter like how long it is. Everyone always says no one has attention spans anymore, but people sit and watch Netflix for like 8 hours in a row. So it's, they do have like attention spans. It's more just, are they interested in what you're creating? And so I think almost now it's a challenge to be able to find stories that are captivating and that people want to watch and listen to and learn like about these athletes. And then just making it a way that if a feature does end up being 3 minutes, that's fine, or even shorter than that. Or if it ends up being 10 minutes long, people are going to watch it. And so it's just creating something that is, I don't want to say good, but like creating something that's worth people taking 5 minutes out of their day to sit there and watch it. And so I think there's still a place for it. And I've kind of noticed that when you only do short like pieces now, and then you put out a longer piece, you almost get more interaction on the longer piece because people are more interested in that than constantly seeing like 10-second clips. And so I think it just kind of depends on like where you are in a season or like what's happening. If you're losing, no one's going to watch anything no matter what. But if you're winning, I think people are going to watch things. So like, for example, we had a Heisman finalist this year with Kyle Trask. And so he had one of the most interesting stories in like college football with not starting a game for like 7 years. And all of a sudden he's a Heisman finalist. And so I think when we released a bunch of longer type pieces on him, our fans were eating it up because they loved him, even though like the end of the season didn't go how we wanted it to, but they were like, he was such a great guy. They were like his biggest fans. And so they were wanting anything Kyle Trask that we put out blew up because they just wanted to see anything and everything with him. And so it's almost finding like the time and the place to do it. So if like we had done that story last year, I think it would have done well, but probably not as well as it did this year. And so it's just kind of navigating time and place.
Well, I think it kind of depends on the story too. I mean, it kind of gets to what we talked about in story length to some extent, where it's like, you know, some stories can live at 30 seconds. Some stories can live at 10 minutes or, you know, 15 minutes. It's just all about finding the right format. Like, not everything needs to be a long form story, and not everything is going to fit into a 30 second little social fun piece. And I think kind of threading that needle to me is like exactly what working in college athletics is. It's because you have to do so many things, and because you're asked to do so many different formats, it's like, okay, where does this fit? You know, how does this live best, and what's the point of doing it? I think that's the key question that I learned, you know, working in college athletics is why. You know, why are we doing this story? Why do I care about this person? And what's the end goal? You know, is it just for a quick social hit, or is it, you know, something that we want to live on and really promote this kid for a Heisman, something like that? So I think that's really awesome insight, and it's something that I've seen too, that why, asking why is always the key question in college athletics for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think too, kind of what you just touched on is that a lot of teams like to do now like pregame videos, which I think are great, but it's also like that lives for maybe an hour depending on when you post it. And so it's like, you want to make everything you put out really good, but it's like, you want to spend 2 hours working on like a 10-second video that is going to be done once the game's over. And so it's just kind of like finding like how you want things to work, and really like, is the pay, like the end worth how much time you're putting in, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, that's what I was just going to ask you, trying to split your time and, you know, you talked about recruits versus audience earlier too. So, you know, being in charge of football and baseball, how do you decide, as you know, you were talking about how the season goes, you can kind of make those decisions, but how do you decide when you can spend that extra time to put together a long form story? Because you're also probably sacrificing some shorter form content in order to be able to do that longer form content.
So I think since we're in baseball season now, I can speak more to that. Baseball's a tricky beast just because you play so many games. And so with baseball, you play a weekend series and then you're playing again Tuesday. And so if you sweep a team or you like do really well or something over the weekend, you really only have Monday to capitalize on it. So like what we would do last year is like our biggest series last year is when we went and played Miami and we ended up sweeping them. And it was like in-state rival. I think it was like a top 10 matchup. And so we always do highlights after every game that we just cut from the TV broadcast. And then we ended up just sharing like short, like social clips of guys like reacting, and a guy hit a home run that was like the go ahead home run. And so we just put out those short clips after the game because we knew like that's exactly what fans wanted to see. It was short, it was easy, like fast to get out. And it kind of just summed up the moment and like the day. And then Monday we would do like a longer kind of like rewind type piece of the weekend. Just like we ended up like doing really well while we could play last year. So we ended up doing it for every series. But like a recap of the season, just like for people who couldn't watch it or like wanted to see. And then it's a different angle because most of the stuff that was used was the stuff that I shot. And so it's just a different kind of, you're in it with the team. You see like the team huddles. And so that is like geared towards fans. It's also geared towards recruits because for the most part, they're not on the field. Like they don't hear what like coaches say to the team. They're not in the dugout. They don't get that like, I'm right there next to them type feel. And so with baseball, I would say it's like most of the stuff you put out can be geared towards both fans and recruits. And then I think part of that too is like finding music that recruits will like and seeing cool things. So like yesterday, I just mic'd up one of our players during practice. And so I'm working on putting that piece together. And athletes like love to see themselves on camera. So it's kind of like fans will love it because he's our shortstop. So he's really entertaining. So fans will like it in that sense. And then I also think recruits will really like it because they're like, oh, cool. If I like, I can go, I can be mic'd up. Like they're going to showcase me. And then too, with all the name, image and likeness stuff that's happening in college athletics, it'll almost like help them to kind of like create their brand and obviously portraying them in like a good light. And so you kind of have to balance that. And then I think to preseason baseball is very different than when you're in season. So preseason, I have to make everything for like the video board and all that stuff. But once that's all done out of the way during the season, I can focus more, I would say, like longer form stuff. And then obviously still some like short, like social, like hype videos and like things from practice and stuff like that.
Let me just tell you that nothing has made me miss living in the South like you describing, you know, early February as baseball season. We just got pounded with snow here in Chicago over the last week, about a foot. And I cannot believe you're talking about being outside for baseball. And
I'm insanely jealous. It was 83 yesterday here, Garrett, just so you
know. Oh, just stop talking.
Garrett, we got a lot of snow here too. So I'm kind of in the same boat as you. It was the super heavy stuff too. So although it was only like 6 inches, it was a pain to actually shovel out. But I love how you were just talking about leveraging different resources though, Nicole, because you were just talking about taking a broadcast feed and leveraging that for your social channels and then saving the more like behind the scenes type content and packaging that so that you're hitting people with content that they want right away. And then you're also following up with content that they can't see anywhere else. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds there. So I think that's really good insight to share because, you know, as you know, there's more and more content that goes out, you know, like we talked about earlier, that access is really what separates some of the best content.
Mm-hmm. I would say too, baseball is a little different than I'd say like basketball, because for the most part, baseball is very wide open. So like, you see pretty much everything on the field. But then for basketball, I know our team, when they just played and beat West Virginia last weekend, one of the first pieces that went out was the team celebrating in the locker room. And so recruits want to see that, like fans want to see that. And so you have to like kind of do it differently for each sport. But I know like post game stuff, especially after like a big win, is one of like the first things that like we always try and get out, because just everyone wants to see that no matter who you are.
You know, take me through what you've learned now that you wish you could tell student Nicole. You know, what would you tell yourself starting out that you've learned in these last, you know, handful of years since you've been out of college?
That's a great question. That's a tough one. I think one of the things I've learned the most is that you're never going to get along with everybody that you work with. And especially being in a creative field, a lot of it is very, not biased, but it's like one person can like something and one person won't. And so it's almost, you have to be open to criticism. And I love criticism because I think that's the only way you get better. But it's also being able to take it and not take things personally a lot of times. And so it's definitely a battle everyone faces, because when you create something from scratch, you fall in love with it and you're like, this is the greatest thing ever. And then when someone comes in and just tears it apart, you're like, what did I do? Like, I'm so bad at my job. And so I would say that's probably one of the things, is just working with people you're not going to get along with all the time. But then at the end of the day, you all have the same goal, which is to promote the program you're working for, promote your student athletes, and just portray them the best you can and portray the university the best you can, and just put out a great content that fans are going to love, that recruits are going to love, that the players are going to love, and just doing that.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.